Meeting for Tuesday, May 29th, 2007, to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember O'Malley?
Here.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Burrow?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Here.
All present.
The next item on the agenda is the closed session item, conference with labor negotiators, agency designated representative Wade McKinney and assistant city manager Jim Lewis on employee bargaining with employee organizations, department heads, confidential, all the employees in the city, essentially. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll close it to the public and we'll retire to closed session. We're waiting for Councilmember Clay. Here he comes. Now we're waiting for Councilmember Burrow. It's a special meeting of the City Council, and I've got numerous emails and phone calls about special meetings. And so I want to start off with some comments about special meetings. The Municipal Code dictates that the City Council instructs the City Manager in matters of policy only while sitting in a duly convened meeting of the City Council. Policies setting the direction of the city have been adopted over many years and many public hearings. They include the general plan, municipal code, budget, economic development strategy, and goals from strategic planning sessions. All of these policies demonstrate the vision of the community and are available at atascadero.org and at the City Hall's front counter. A letter addressed to the city manager was received from the Atascadero Land Preservation Society on April the 30th, 2007. It requested consideration of a $250,000 match for a $1.75 million purchase of 103 acres of pristine Atascadero woodland. This proposal is consistent with all policies of the City Council, including the General Plan's smart growth principles, to recognize and preserve critical areas of open space and environmental habitats, and it's also consistent with the council's goal of natural resource protection. The deadline for the grant application is June 1st, so consideration by the council in May is crucial. There was already a special meeting on May the 8th for consideration of a new hotel and a regular meeting for the Creek Ordinance. The meeting on May 22nd had been canceled because council members were attending a conference. The Municipal Code provides that special meetings may be ordered in accordance with the provisions of the Government Code of the State. It requires that public notice be given 24 hours before the meeting, and the notice for this meeting was posted last Thursday. The city manager properly scheduled this special hearing to consider Alp's request, and he has my full support in televising the meeting and adding community forum. Normally, community forum is not part of a special meeting, but there is nothing normal about Atascadero's politics. Is there any other council comments?
Yeah, let's have a flag salute.
I don't think that's on the...
But I think we should do it.
Okay. Oh, it's fine.
I'll leave it.
You can lead it. Please arise. Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is community forum, and I will give my usual admonition to the speakers. Please give your name and city. Please direct your comments to the entire council and not to individual council members. Please do not use slanderous, profane, or negative personal remarks concerning individuals absent or present. Please remember that all of us, the council, the staff, and citizens, want the best for Atascadero, and if you disagree, do so agreeably. To the audience, I again ask that you be respectful and courteous to the speakers and refrain from vocal expressions of approval or disapproval, such as clapping or heckling. If you want to express your support for a speaker, then by all means, raise your hand. The council can see exactly what's going on. Okay, we'll start with Mr. Jansen.
Raymond Jansen at Atascadero. If you think that per capita we are spending twice as much per capita for health as the nations in Europe, and we have no plan, we have no universal coverage. With this California plan, which is nonprofit, the savings are very significant, and the savings can be put into proper health care, preventive care, which is more efficient. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, it is said. Part of the problem is that we do not think collectively. If I put up my hands, what do you see? 10 fingers is what I was told. What you don't realize, there are only 2 hands there, and they're connected to 1 body. If we would stop thinking as fingers and thinking of ourselves as part of hands and other larger organs of society, we would get things done. I have great respect for all the time that is spent here on problems, but I remember one evening, 35 or 40 minutes was given to whether a piece of traffic way should be renamed. And I say, what difference would it make? William James said, a fact is something that makes a difference. If you save for businesses 19% per year, that money can be spent on offering better business. If families save $340 average per year, that money can be spent in the community, and business should be shouting for this. It's a money-raising plan for the good of all. I don't know why we can't. I would just like to see it as an agenda item. Endorsement costs nothing. Membership in this organization is modest. There's all kinds of scales. And believe me, it would be good investment on the part of every one of us. I am a member, and you get a very nice membership book with a lot of information, and I recommend we use that. So please, council members, Mr. Mayor, I've shared with you the results of my little survey, which I did in place of calling you individually, and I still wait for your initiative to show your leadership on this question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
My name is Ann Ketcherside. I'm not as prepared as I will be for June 12th. End of the settlement, which is only 2 pages, which is only, 60 cents. And the last 2 pages have Pam Heatherton's and Jerry Clay's signature. I want to stop right here and say I am 200% against the Creekside setback, and if I could find that petition here tonight, I'd like to sign it twice if I could. I am for property owners' rights, and I hate to say this to the city council. You say not to talk about one person, but Jerry Clay cannot vote on this because of him signing that in 2003 or 2004. I believe Pam had to withdraw too. And I kind of hate to see that happen because we need his vote to fight it. And another thing is, he's also a resident of one of the areas that would be affected. So that is a conflict of interest in two different ways. So I believe that during the vote, he has to withdraw himself, which I kind of find sad because what's law is law, and that's what counts. I will be not only speaking on the Creekside setback, I have people coming from Los Angeles to speak on it. Like I said, I'm not prepared. I was getting ready for June 12th. I have a document here that I haven't been able to completely read. It's on Local Agenda 21, the UN plan for your community. And you can go on your website and get a copy of it and get educated, because my friend out of Colorado said the Creekside setback type thing happened in Colorado. It's happening around the nation, and it is not a good thing. So besides stealing people's property, it seems like it's tied into the UN. Just read Agenda 21 on your computers. The second thing I'm here to talk about, which I just picked this up the other day, and I want to say that City Hall Front Desk has just been great at getting me this paperwork. The youth center is being built on 5599 Traffic Way. This is about $6 for this copy. Human Health Risk Assignment, 5599 Traffic Way, Atascadero, California. The man that prepared this gave it over to some people in Santa Maria, and it's out of Santa Monica also, and he was let go a few months later. Now, I don't know all the details on that because I started doing a study on this 11 months ago, and I was asked by Karen Villa to please stop, because she was working with FEMA. And I was working with FEMA at one point. She was going to do 3 different big articles, but after the election, I won't state who, got her fired from her position. And I've only talked to her once since. But she was talking to FEMA. There are health risks on that 5599 traffic way property.
In question whether they would be here or not, my understanding is that their contract is to videotape all city council meetings. I'm sure it's implicit that that doesn't include closed session, but it should include special meetings, strategic planning sessions, pre-meeting study sessions. Whatever you do when you're doing the public's business, it's part of the public record, and it educates the public to see you doing it. And anyway, I'm glad they're here, and if we need a special agenda item to clarify what all means, then by all means set it on the agenda. I second Ray's concern and do believe we should communicate with our legislators relative to health care for all. I have another suggestion in terms of agendizing a communication with our legislators and with the governor, and that is raising concerns about the governor's May revise in the state budget. There are several serious problems with it. One is he proposes to permanently eliminate all funding for subventions for property tax losses for Williamson Act contracts. Now, that may not seem to directly involve the city, since the Williamson Act lands are in the unincorporated area, and the county essentially brokers these subventions and signs the contracts. However, it actually very directly affects our ability to implement smart growth policies, because our smart growth within the city depends on the surrounding rural agricultural land remaining rural and agricultural and not becoming a penumbra of competing urban interests that drain sales tax dollars away from us, pour traffic into our streets, and frustrate our planning efforts. So we have a tremendous interest here as a city in the continuation of the Williamson Act, and I would hope that you would raise that concern. The other big concern I have with the May revise is the raid of public transit funding, and it's even increased over the raid that was proposed in January. From $1.1 billion raid from state transit assistance to a $1.3 billion raid. In addition, it would now mean a permanent shutoff of the gas tax. When the gas price of gas gets high and the gas tax collections rise, it would mean a permanent shutoff of any use of that money for public transit. And when the price of gasoline is increasing, that's exactly when people go flocking to public transit, and it had better be there. That's when we need to be investing in public transit. As you know, we have plans here in our town for a transit center and for improved transit to serve it. And the last thing we should be doing as a cool city is allowing the state to frustrate our efforts toward modal shift. There are other bills in the legislature to try to reduce vehicle miles traveled. We're not going to be able to do that if our public transit funding is eviscerated. So I hope you would agendize for the next meeting an item to send a letter of
campaign finance reform ideas. That meeting is going to be on June 26th. I had incorrectly said that it was on June 12th. That's not right. It's June 26th. And I encourage people to show up for that meeting so we can talk about this. There are several items that I hope we talk about at that meeting. Some of the proposals are, and there's a draft from the city on this that includes some of these, not all of them. One idea is to have a maximum contribution limit that's currently suggested to be $250. Another is to have that maximum contribution apply only to individuals, not to businesses, not to unions, not to organizations of any sort, just walking, talking people. And that way, everybody is equal. Joe Smith, who doesn't own a business, is not at a disadvantage compared to John Doe, who does. As it stands right now, John Doe can contribute as an individual. He can also contribute as part of his business. He can also contribute as part of the Elks Club or the Chamber of Commerce or any other number of professional organizations or clubs he might belong to. Making it just individuals be capable of making the contributions is simply a way to make the playing field level, and everybody has the same opportunities to influence by way of contributions. Another item would be to, if petition gatherers are being paid to gather petition signatures, this information would be put on the top of the petition so people who are signing the petitions will know if they're being paid or not. I've sent a lot of petitions around in my day. I've never been paid a dime for any of them because I believe in what I'm doing. That's not always the case. A lot of times these petition drives are funded by one organization or another, and in the interest of transparency, I think people should know what that is. And another new one that I just learned about, and this is as proposed statewide legislation on this, that all campaign contributions will be available online. We can do that in our city ahead of this statewide legislation, and I think that's a good idea, again, just for transparency so people know who's contributing to who. And the other item that was brought in from the San Luis Obispo ordinance was a limit on size, on the size of signs. So I encourage people to show up for the June 26th meeting where we'll be discussing this. On another item, some of you may have heard of a recall that's being done by Ray Buban and Mike Jackson, I guess, are the ones who started it. A couple comments on that. Nearly everybody I've read in the newspapers, all the letters to the editor are against this, and they all say basically the same thing, that recalls are meant for instances of malfeasance, unethical behavior, illegal behavior, major shortcomings in a public official's duties, none of which has even been alleged by the people who are pushing this recall effort. They talk about agendas, people pursuing their agendas. Well, that's what people run office for, so they can state their views to the public, and then when they get elected, if they get elected, then they try to carry out those views. And that's exactly what Mike Brendler and Ellen Barreau have done, and I support them for that. Even if you don't support their vision for Atascadero, I think it behooves you to point to something they've done that's illegal, immoral, unethical to handle politics in this town at this time. And Mr. Clay, I'd appreciate hearing something from you on this matter as well. Do you think that the recall is an appropriate thing to be done in Atascadero at this time? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Hi, Jolene Horn, 3650 Falda Avenue in Atascadero. I, along with many other private property owners in Atascadero, was very disappointed that the council was not willing to compromise at all regarding the 35-foot creek setback. You are our elected representatives. When the public spoke out against Walmart, you listened and you voted against Walmart. On May 8th, the public spoke out loud and long against the 35-foot creek setback, and you ignored us and voted it into place. Most of us think it's pretty awesome that our creeks have steelhead trout. From what I've read, there was no setback in place from 1983 to 2002. It seems to most of us that our creeks must be in pretty good shape without any government restrictions on private property. I'm really concerned with the improvements that are allowed within the setbacks. If you want us to feel at all comfortable with this ordinance, I suggest that you take out item 7, trails. If the trail restoration project is truly about trails in the creek reservation parcels, there is no reason to allow trails within the setbacks on private property. Also, I suggest that you clarify to us number 10 of that improvement list permitted within setbacks. That's the water course monitoring or gauging facilities operated by local, state, or federal agencies. What does this mean? Is this a little metal gauge in the creek, or is it a kiosk within the setback? Does the local, state, or federal agency then have the right to come and go on our property to monitor the gauging facility? What does this look like exactly? Also, please give us a true cost of a hydrogeomorphologist. It looks like you're giving us a way to make an improvement on our own property within the setback and then making it impossible for us to do so. I ask that you reconsider approaching the 35-foot creek setback on a case-by-case basis. I know that there are properties that are closer to the creek, but in our case, we own property on Ensenada. Our property line, the creek reservation line, is about 65 feet away from the creek. For you to tell us now that we cannot use another 35 feet in from our property line is ridiculous. Please do not paint all of these properties with a broad brush. We are asking you to listen to us and consider us as the private property owners and registered voters of Atascadero. Please remember that you represent us, the citizens of Atascadero who elected you. You do not represent EcoSLO or any other social group. Now, for your information, this ordinance has already started to affect property values negatively. A realtor friend of mine told me that she was working with a set of buyers who wrote an offer on a property here in town. During their counteroffers, the realtor became aware of the ordinance and, of course, told the buyers that it may affect the property they wanted to buy. Because of that, the buyers decided not to buy that property. So those sellers, the property owners, lost a sale and since then have reduced their price, and they are still on the market. They have not sold their house, their property. I would like to know where the council is getting their information that this ordinance will actually increase the value of these properties. I would like to share that information. Who believes that values will increase, as she has seen in other areas with similar ordinances, is not familiar enough with Atascadero to know that the properties along the creeks are already at about 95% developed. This ordinance is not going to protect against any big development projects. But for anyone who believes that this is going to increase property values, my husband and I are offering to sell you our property on Ensenada. That's 5430 and 5440 Ensenada. We will sell it to you for exactly what we paid for it. Give me a call, 440-2825. Let's talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Horn.
Yes, hello. My name is Jim Estenis, Marchant Avenue. I'm just here to voice my support for the council members of Mike Bremler and Ellen Bernard. I just wanted to show up here and let you guys know that I really feel that the election was held in a democratic kind of way, that you did receive the majority of votes here, and you deserve to serve your term, and this recall action, I feel, is very unjust. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Estenis.
I'm Lee Perkins, and I live in Atascadero. I'd like to express empathy to Tom O'Malley regarding his back condition, and I'm sorry to see that it's so serious he cannot even attend the city council meeting. It's 1 year ago tomorrow, May 3rd, 1906, that citizens of Atascadero came out in a groundswell to voice eloquently the outrage at a proposal for a giant big box in the Del Rio neighborhood. Even though we heard it said there is no Walmart, we knew better. We have hundreds more, now that it is a year later, who oppose Walmart coming into our community. And I'd like to comment on development that I see going on in town. Two hotels are going up. Cayman Cyclery is operating a new store in a little plaza down near Ash, together with another plaza along Frontage Road near Cooperville. There's new construction on housing and apartments, four new storefronts downtown on Entrada, and two new large storefronts going in at the Mission Oaks Annex. And I understand that Mike and Ellen helped expedite this. I would say that this represents ongoing development. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Perkins.
Heather Moreno, Atascadero. While I can appreciate that Mr. Jansen and others would like to see universal health care, I would urge the council to look at what universal health care might really mean. And I wasn't necessarily prepared to talk tonight. I just felt compelled upon hearing some views expressed. Universal health care, in fact, when government gets involved in health care, over the years it's shown that costs actually increase. When people receive health care and the cost is hidden to them, it's viewed as free, and people tend to use health care indiscriminately. Had I been prepared, I'd have numbers and bore you with details tonight. People often use it, again, indiscriminately with really no concern to whether what it might cost and who's really paying for it. The federal government actually pays, or the government pays, for 26% of the population in terms of health care, yet they pay for 46% of the cost. So 46 increased it by a million because of the increase in population. However, of that 45 million at the time that census was taken, 14.1 million of those people were eligible for Medicaid, and in fact 9 million of them were covered. And the Census Bureau has issued a statement that says that that number was overstated, that 45 million. 9.8 million of those people make more than $50,000 a year, and half of those make over $75,000 a year. They choose to do something else with their money, and that's their choice. What I'm trying to get at is there is more to it than just saying 45 million people are uninsured. You know, healthcare is out of control. We have a healthcare crisis. We don't have a healthcare crisis. We have the best healthcare in the world here in this country. We have a health cost crisis, and I don't think universal healthcare is the answer to that. So I would urge you to look more at the details, and I'm happy to help facilitate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moreno.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and citizens. I'm Tom Comar, a 21-year resident of Atascadero. I'm also a spokesperson for Oppose Walmart, which is an all-volunteer, locally funded grassroots organization made up of men and women, young and old, union, non-union, Democrat, Republican, independent, from all occupations. Now, our primary mission has been to protect our city and our way of life from economic development that we believe will change the character of our city forever. We believe that everyone, whether you are for or against that Walmart Supercenter, is for a prosperous and successful livable town where we can raise our children in an environment without unmanageable traffic, noise, and LA-style urbanization. As neighbors, we may have differences in our vision for the future of Atascadero, but as we always said, what binds us together is more than what divides us. However, the proposed Walmart Supercenter and the recent recall are dividing us. Oppose Walmart has always put Atascadero first in demanding smart and good development. In our search for what it really means if a Walmart super center comes to town, we discovered many independent and academic studies, like the 10-year Iowa University study and the Berkeley study, which disclose the reality versus the rhetoric of Walmart's justification for a gigantic super center stuck in the Del Rio neighborhood. The Walmart issue galvanized the electorate in the November 6th election, resulting in a torrent of participatory democracy and put the process of government and land use under a floodlight of public scrutiny. The election results were about the right of individual citizens, as opposed to special interest groups, developers, or corporations, to determine the future of our town. Mike Brindler and Ellen Bayrou energized that support through hard work, doing their homework, and taking courageous pro-business stands to protect both the zoning and the smart growth principles of the general plan, positions that George Luna alone had staked out over the years. Against overwhelming odds and money politics, these principled mainstream positions won the day. This election was historic for Atascadero. It revealed how much our town has changed and confirm the existence of a new mainstream political perspective. It is this perspective that has the potential to enhance the city of Atascadero's smart development and correct problems that may exist. Name-calling and labeling city council and others as socialist, their positions as communistic, is intended to shortcut real debate of the issues. It is inappropriate and unproductive for name-calling to take the place of open discussion of challenging issues facing the city. This recall took a page right out of Walmart's store's playbook. Walmart has spent millions over the years on recalls, ballot measures, initiatives, and elections to overturn the will of the people, city council ordinances, and city general plans to get their way and protect their profits. In other words, Walmart has used the system to subvert citizen participation in the democratic process. It's called corporate democracy, where the ones with the most money generally win, but not always. Now, despite the denials of Walmart and their developer Rotman's participation in this recall, the question must be asked: who would benefit the most from this recall? How convenient to be able to publicly distance yourself from an unsavory and unpopular recall that has no merit, but whose outcome, if it did, would provide Walmart with the greatest benefit, a new council to change the zoning. And as Walmart's playbook has shown, in spite of their public protest that they're not involved, there's more than one way to pass the envelope.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Comar.
Good evening. My name is Steve Tillman. Members of the City Council, staff, members of the public. In an act of unity, I'd like to discuss a term that sometimes has been used to divide. It's not always what we say, but it's sometimes what we mean those words to be. And that term that I've heard lately is the term activist. And so I went to the dictionary, several of them, and I wanted to find out why the term activist was so polarizing in this community. And dictionary.com defines activist as an especially active, vigorous advocate of a cause. Webster defines it as advocating or engaged in activism. Cambridge defines it as a person who believes strongly in political or social change and works hard to try to make this happen. So far, not too much is too threatening. So I decided to go to the next step and look at who were some of the activists over time that some of us might be aware of. Activist Susan B. Anthony, in her opinion, she believed in voting rights for women and equal rights for all. Activist Frederick Douglass, in his opinion, escaping slavery was just the beginning of his fight to free people, and went on to become a prominent activist for the abolition of slavery and for civil rights for all oppressed people. Activist Mother Teresa, the 1979 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, in her opinion, there exists a great hunger for love and support throughout the world, and she devoted her life to advocating for and working with those she saw to have the least of both, the poorest of the poor. Activist First Lady Laura Bush, a staunch advocate for women's rights. In her opinion, fighting domestic violence is a key part of battling the AIDS crisis in South. Republican President Theodore Roosevelt, in his opinion, he believed that a balance between the private and public good is essential, especially for those yet to be born. This group is a rather eclectic group, I have to admit. One of the first feminists, an escaped slave, a sister to the poor, our current First Lady, the wife of a wounded Marine, our 26th president. And what do they all have in common? They are people who advocated for a cause. They are common people who went on to achieve uncommon goals. In short, they were activists. Activists not unlike those in our own community who volunteer with loaves and fishes, with ECHO at our public schools, with coaching youth sports, and who work to preserve the natural beauty of all of our community. At some level, just by being here tonight, whether speaking or remaining silent, we are all activists for an ideal. And if we come here before you to advocate for one position or another, please respect us and please protect speakers against the need by some to demonize and to denigrate those they may not agree with. In a democracy, the will of the voter is paramount. We saw that last November. But I further believe that having a say should never, ever be confused with getting one's own way. But hey, that's just my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Tillman.
Good evening, council members and mayor and staff. My name is David Broadwater. I live up on Portola Road. I, too, want to commend the city for deciding for this particular meeting to have AGP video here to broadcast this meeting, and also for allowing a public comment on non-agenda items in this community forum. I think those are both smart decisions. A few things that I wanted to talk about tonight, and one of them is about information getting to a full city council meeting in the public in reports so that the public are informed about things that happen at other meetings that you have, such as at strategic planning meetings that you've had in the past. For instance, campaign financing has now come up, and it took some people in the community, I think, by surprise But not many people may have known that back in February, when you had a two-day strategic planning workshop, you decided, and in working with staff, that campaign financing reform was number four on your list of priorities. Also, broadcasting meetings came up June 5th of last year. And one of the things that I've noticed that's happened at city council meetings is these things happen in these other strategic planning meetings, yet it doesn't come to a full staff report or some kind of meeting here during these city council meetings where it's the general public is alerted that these are the things that are going on that we're deciding. And I think it would be better if you made sure every single time that you had these types of meetings that you have a report on the record about the discussions that you had, the decisions that you were made, the priorities that you select for the community, so people have an opportunity to know about that papers rather than just merely going through the bureaucratic minimum that you need to under the Brown Act of faxing the information and letting the newspapers decide would be an improvement, I believe. Finally, I wanted to talk some about the recall, as you know, but not that many people in the public, I believe, know about what this recall of Mike Brendler and Ellen Burrow may cost the taxpayers of this town. It's going to be at least $45,000, according to the city's most recent estimate, and that may change if it's consolidated with the upcoming February presidential primary. If it's not consolidated with that February primary, it's going to escalate and may be as much or more than as $65,000. And I just think that, as the recallers have said and the opponents of the creek setback, that maybe you ought to consider reimbursing the city for that cost and put your money where your mouth is. When Mr. Jackson was asked on KPR Radio's Sound Off what the cost was going to be, refused to answer. Regarding the connection with Walmart, one of the signers is a man named Mike Bertaccini. He works for EDA Design Professionals, which is the company that works for Walmart designing their project for a supercenter at the annex. EDA Design Professionals is Walmart in terms of what happens that comes to this city hall here. So there is a Walmart connection with Buben and Jackson's plans to recall these two people. And finally, I would just like to ask you and the community to think about what happens when we have character assassination and guilt by association, when people are charged with conflicts of interest simply because they belong to community organizations. What about people who belong to the chamber, the realtors, the Rotary, the Kiwanis, help the homeless, help the hungry? Are they going to be accused and have their characters assassinated in the future too? I think it's a bad precedent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broadwater.
Good evening, everyone. Jim Shannon, 8000 Cormor Avenue here in Atascadero. I, too, want to talk about the recall. And not so much about the recall itself, but some statements that were in the paper by the people who are being recalled. As Mr. Broadwater just mentioned, he talked about the cost of a recall. It's going to be $45,000. And one of the statements that I read by one of the people being recalled was saying that it's going to take away from money for the children, the elderly. It's going to take away money for the playground at Paloma Park and other things. I want to go back a little bit. Back in, I think it was late December or January, when three people on this council voted to buy a piece of property up here on the corner of Cemetery Road and Highway 41, less than a quarter acre, for over $100,000 of our general fund money, which could have bought two playgrounds. Okay? That piece of property, there's nothing more than a drainage ditch. Your goal is to put a sign on there saying, "Welcome to Atascadero." I don't know if that's going to, maybe it's going to bring the thousands of tourists to the city to walk on our path that you guys are now gouging the Atascadero Creek, the same creek that you voted 3-2 to restrict what we can do with our, the way that we are being restricted on the freedoms we are by some people on this council. That's another one. Another issue, Stadium Park issue. Talk about the majority of people come up here and speak. Majority of people came and speak that night were for that. Okay? Majority of the people were. And you're talking about a few improvements that would be beneficial to the city, that would bring revenue and tourists to the city, to a great venue we have there. And you went against the people, the majority of the people. Another issue was a setback issue. Again, what, 90-some, probably 90% of the people who spoke that night, whether they're realtors or whatever. I'm an individual in this city. I'm not a member of any group, any opposed group of anything. I'm a citizen, single parent, trying to raise two kids in the city. And I'm very disappointed with what I see and the direction we're going. That creek setback thing was absolutely wrong, okay? You talk about the Walmart issue where you want to stick to the general plan that we have. You had no problem amending the general plan to fix your 35-foot setback. When right here our city attorney said that 20-foot setback with the general plan the way it was fine, but you chose to amend it so you could do what you wanted to ram something down our throat that the majority of people didn't want for like the third time. Okay. Another problem I have is the appointing of Pamela Hetherington as our planning on the planning commission. How many people knew that she was the head or the executive director of EcoSlow at the time this lawsuit all started? I want to know how many people in this council that sat there when this was happening knew that it was happening. That sends up a big red flag to me, and all of a sudden we have a setback issue put before us and rammed down our throat, whether what we wanted or not. It's not just a setback issue. It's the Walmart issue I won't even get into right now because that is tainted from the beginning, okay? We are not given – I'm not a big Walmart fan. I've probably shopped – the one in Paso maybe 10 times the whole time it's been there. But when I see people up here already making a decision without even seeing a project, that's wrong. I don't care if you don't like Walmart and you don't approve of anything that they stand for or you believe all this other garbage you hear, you have the right to listen to them, all right? They deserve the right to be heard. Now, what if they did come in and meet the general plan at 140,000 square foot? I would like to know if you'd support that. Or would you amend the general plan if it's 150,000 square foot to accommodate them for 10,000 square feet? You did that in other issues. You know, the creek setback thing, the attorney sit here and tells us that it's not a taking. Okay, maybe it's not a taking, but you are restricting our property rights and you're restricting what we can do. And at the same time you're restricting that, you're damaging the riparian environment down on the creek by what you're doing. Who gave you the right to, what hoops do you have to jump through, and what environmental agencies you go to pour the concrete in those footbridges that are down there between Portola and San Gabriel? That was environmental friendly? I don't think so. But because you guys have the right, you think you have the right to do that, and at the same time you're denying our rights to do this stuff. This is just wrong. You need to think about that.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon. Seeing no other speakers, I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the council. Just a couple of things that I noted. First of all, Mr. David Broadwater asked for a report on strategic planning, and I'm not sure about when the minutes came before the council for approval. But on May the 8th this year, so the February meeting that he talked about. In addition to that, it's important to realize that a lot happens before these meetings. And as Mr. Shannon pointed out, general plan in 2002 with years of actually public hearings and passed by the council on a 3-2 vote. And there are many staff reports. For example, in the report there that we had for May the 8th, the Region Water Quality Control Board sent a letter basically saying that 20 feet was, they would not accept 20 feet, that they would accept 35 feet. And so there's a lot of things that happen in a meeting, and it's important that you realize when you make your comments that you address those particular items and not just state blanket opinions and expect us to accept them as fact. Council member, the lights are working. So, Council member Clay?
Yes. In regards to Ann Ketcherside's statement that I signed the agreement, I was mayor at that time. A lot of people don't realize I was mayor at one time in Atascadero. And the city attorney approved the agreement, and the council voted on it, and as mayor, I signed the agreement. In regards to Mark Phillips saying that that the Chamber and the Elks Club and service clubs donate to candidates. They do not, they can't, you know, service clubs remain non-political. The Chamber, as far as I know, remains non-political. And then with Lee Perkins stating that Mike and Ellen brokered the deal, and I would like to know if that's the truth. Did you broker the deal?
Well, I mean, that's not... That,
well, okay, I mean, you know, we're talking about
facts. I'm not even
facts.
Sure what deal you're talking about. But besides that, you can ask them outside of the meeting.
Okay, fine. But I would like to comment, you know, like on activists. I don't know how many Mother Teresas we have here in Tascadero. Not all activists are good. Some are bad. You know, I don't have a problem with them myself, but... just because you're an activist doesn't mean that you're a Mother Teresa type. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I think it's, you know, too bad that the Stop Walmart people have taken this as a political time to jump on Walmart. The creek setbacks is what triggered the recall, and it had nothing to do with Walmart. It had nothing to do with the Rotman Group. In fact, the day after the recall was presented, I called back at Arkansas to let them know what was happening, and their first words were, "Oh, no." And that's not a statement that you're going to hear from someone that's excited about a recall. I think it was unfortunate that Mike went on the Dave Coughlin show and said that Tom O'Malley's fingerprints were all over the recall. I know for a fact Tom had nothing to do with it, and I think it's a shame that he made those accusations. He also stated that Walmart was behind it and that up and down, and it went one way or the other. Whichever group loses should stop right there, but I know they won't. There'd be lawsuits and so on and so forth. Let's see. The other thing that's bad of this whole thing with recall, we're going back to these deals about who's got integrity and that we didn't have integrity before and that these backroom deals and so on and so forth was all a bunch of baloney. Wendy Scalise had integrity. Becky Packus had integrity. George Luna had integrity. Tom O'Malley has integrity. I have integrity, and I'd put it up against anybody that's on this council right now. So when they say those kind of things, you know, they're just slapping me and the past council in the face. If there's specific things that you know about, let's bring them forward and let's get them out in the air, okay? Let's not make accusations that this person doesn't have integrity and that one is doing backroom deals and so on and so forth. There's not one staff member that can make a deal with anybody. It has to come before us and it has to be three votes and so on. There's not one council member that can make a deal with anybody, any developer or anything else. It's kind of ironic that we're trying to keep business people from donating to the campaign funds, and then if you read the Alps business here, you'll find that if they're saying that if they need help, they're going to go to the public and to the business community. The business community drives this community. They're the ones that make it happen. And whenever they need money, who do they go to? They go to the business community. So I'm upset about this integrity business and accusations of Walmart. They had nothing to do with this. The Rotman Group had nothing to do with it. Tom O'Malley had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with it. And that's the facts and that's the truth. And you can spread all them rumors you want, but they're a bunch of lies.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
Thank you. I think that comparing our integrity to one another is fruitless, it's counterproductive, and I think that in general that the people can see through that. As related to Mr. Shannon's comments about the vast majority having been present during the creek setback issue, you must remember that the vast majority of the populace exists outside the walls of this chamber. There was perhaps 300, maybe as many as 400 people, but that represents perhaps 2 to 4% of the people here in Atascadero. And I feel my job is to represent all of them. And I had received many, many emails, both pro and con, and I tried to do the best I could in doing my homework and coming to a very sound, articulate grounds for my decisions. It's interesting to me to know or to mention to you that tomorrow night the city of Aurora Grande is advancing their creek setback ordinance. So it doesn't just happen here. And hopefully they won't have to experience the contentiousness that we've experienced here over the past several months. And as related to the recall, I have a...
Councilmember Clay.
Environmental groups are special interest too, by the way, Mike. In regards to comparing integrity, you know, it's your group, your side, your friends, your people that talk about, and even yourself, bringing transparency and so on and so forth back. So it's not coming from me. We just see things through different eyes. In the meeting on the creek setback, I looked out and I saw neighbors. I saw people that own property, and I saw some realtors. And that night, Mike, you said that you looked out and you saw realtors and speculators. See, I saw it differently. I saw real people out there, real property owners, people that were concerned. And only maybe 50% of the speakers were one way or the other. A lot of the speakers that spoke in favor of this creek setback were from out of town, San Luis, Paso Robles, and so on. I would say 85% of the people in the audience, by the hand raising, were against the creek setback. And if you went to the Planning Commission meeting, it was very evident. It was at least, you know, 95%. So I guess we just see things in a different way, Mike.
Councilmember Burrow.
And I think that's okay that we see things differently. And, you know, that's what elections do. They help bring diversity to our council. And I think that's what the public was looking for when we had our last election. And, you know, I was thinking about this whole issue of the recall when I was driving down here. And one thing that really struck me is that what is a special interest group? I think normally when we think of special interest group, we think of someone who's going to get a financial gain from whatever decision that's made. I don't understand how people can label me as a special interest or saying I represent special interests, or because I was on the board of ALPS, that was a special interest when the gain was for the community, not for myself personally. So I want to bring out that fact. On the creek setback, my view of that was that it was about 50-50. I did keep track. And I don't agree with Mrs. Horn that there were no compromises made that night. I think that's false. There were several. And we can talk about that another time. I do want to say that I appreciate the wave of support from all the people who have contacted me, see me in the street. Makes me feel very well loved and supported, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Oh, and then about the public comment, Eric Greening brought up we should have some kind of response to the legislature about the takeaways with the Williamson Act and the public transit changes. And I would like to move that we either agendize that or direct staff that we have a letter to our legislators in protest of some of the changes that are proposed in the May revise.
Has there been anything going out from the league to Blakeslee and Maldonado?
I haven't seen a new position, but we should get one any time now.
Maybe we can talk to David Mullinax and see what the league is doing, and then maybe we can piggyback on writing a letter.
Okay.
But, you know, there are some compromises, and we don't all get our ways. But if things get too bad one way or the other, then there's always the election process.
Thank you. I think it's important that we all work together. With that, we'll move on to management reports. A, this is a request for funding commitment to assist in the purchase of property by the Atascadero Land Preservation Society. And Community Development Director Warren Frace, are you giving
Birch, this, could I just say one thing, and I didn't answer the question. I'm going to remain neutral in this recall. I have friends on both sides of the aisle, and I'm going to respect their rights to recall and just remain neutral. So that's my position, folks.
So I think Assistant City Manager Jim Lewis is giving the report.
Thank you, Mayor and members of Council. Tonight, the Atascadero Land Preservation Society is requesting assistance in obtaining a grant to purchase open space. ALPS is a local private nonprofit conservation organization committed to preserving the natural areas in Atascadero. ALPS was founded in 1989 by local residents concerned with maintaining Atascadero's natural beauty. One of ALPS' purposes is to purchase land by acquiring grants and using cash contributions. ALPS obtains titles to open space or sensitive land and then preserves the property for future generations, which is one of their purposes. ALPS is working with the Trust for Public Land, a national organization dedicated to acquiring open space, to purchase the approximately 103-acre parcel south of Highway 41 in the area of Three Bridges. If we could show a map there. You can see the property is the green property right there. Currently owned by the Davis family, the purchase price of the property is established at fair market value, which is estimated at $1,750,000. ALPS has applied for a grant through the California River Parkways grant, which is funded by Proposition 50 in the amount of $1.5 million. If they are successful with their application and receive the grant money, they will still need $250,000 to purchase the property. An encouraging note, very encouraging, ALPS has had a site visit with grant representatives, and they have scored very well. They were informed that they would be in a much stronger position to receive the grant if they had the entire purchase price accounted for prior to the time the decisions are made, which we anticipate to be soon, as the grant is due June 1st. The Atascadero Native Tree Association has sent a letter to the city supporting the purchase of the property and authorizing use of tree fund monies to complete the transaction. To tie this to the general plan, the purchase of open space would comply with the intent of the City Council's goal of natural resources protection, and it conforms to the general plan and open space policies, particularly several in the land use element. Number 5, preserving contours of the hills. Number 6, preserving natural flora and fauna, protecting scenic lands, sensitive natural areas, and cultural resources, and seeking funding, additional funding to purchase areas of unique habitat. Item number 7, tree-covered hills shall be preserved to retain the distinctive scenic quality of our community. And number 8, watershed areas in Atascadero shall be protected. So this is consistent with the general plan. Funding for the project would be $50,000 from the tree fund and $200,000 from the open space acquisition fund. The tree fund is funded by fees collected to mitigate the loss of trees resulting from development in society to guarantee open space status on the property in perpetuity. Doug Chisholm, president of ALPS, is also here to answer questions, as well as the staff. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions, Councilmember Clay? I see your light.
I'll hold off.
Councilmember Barreau.
My question is, does the property line, does it go all the way to the corner where Old Morro Road is? How far? I know it contains the swimming hole, but do we have an estimate of how close it is to that intersection? I never had the opportunity to walk the site.
Which portion of Old Morro Road are you referring to?
You know how when you're going up 41 and it starts going uphill and there's the old Morro Road is on the left, Old Morro Road West?
It's passing. Yeah, I believe it doesn't actually quite touch there.
Okay. So the hillside that you see when you're driving down into town, that one that you see that's part of, you know, I don't know, you can see it when you're driving down into the valley. Does that include any part of that?
Let me put an aerial up real quick.
You know, maybe the people from ALPS might know that too.
You can see on the screen right here, here's Old Morro Road as it breaks off from 41. So there's the tip of the property right here, and there's 41 following Atascadero Creek. So the red boundary is the property in question.
Okay, thank you for showing the topo.
Councilmember Clay.
Yeah, Warren, for all practical purposes, well, the property is zoned recreation, is that not right?
The majority of it's recreation. There's a little piece that I think is rural residential.
I see. Would you know where that piece is?
I believe this triangle here is zoned recreation or rural residential, and then these two pieces down here are the recreation pieces.
Okay, so, you know, theoretically, I thought that was all zoned recreation, but on recreation property, you can't build a home, right?
Yeah, I think when I spoke last week, I may have not described it correctly. I didn't realize that last piece wasn't zoned recreation, mm-hmm. but you're correct. In the recreation zone, you cannot build single family or any residential for that matter.
And in regards to that other piece, it's very steep, and it would be very difficult and very costly, would it not, to bring a road in, to, you know, what would you have to do to develop that piece?
This is the slope map of the property right here, mm-hmm. and let me turn off the trees. The red areas are all areas with slopes over 30%, and the orange would be 20 to 30%. You can see the vast majority of the site is 30% and greater. So any development on sites or slopes that are that steep is very difficult and cost prohibitive for the...
You know, as you know, they talked about grazing. I don't think it's even fenced, or even if you could graze, unless they were going to use goats to clean out some of the poison oak or something.
I don't know. You probably want to refer that to the representatives from Alps.
Okay. You know, I think it's only fair that that I weigh in on my position, because Alps is going to come up and talk. But first off, you know, I don't think if we did nothing, I think that property would sit there for another 100 years. And it's not developable, folks. It would be in open space, so to speak. I know that it was on the market in recent years, I understand, for $350,000 a parcel, and that was just a figure that one of the realtors gave me off the top of his head. There was no takers. I also know, and Marge is there, but I think Gordon Davis at one time was offering the property to the city or to Marge for $0. So how did we go from zero to $1.75 million? I guess that's my case. I'm not against acquiring this property. I just think that it's a sweetheart deal for the Davis family at 1.75 million, even at 1.5 million, and I think it's just too much. I'd rather see our funds go into Stadium Park to purchase an easement to Stadium Park, a property that's, you know, just a few hundred yards away here that the whole city could use. And for some reason or other, we're not interested in doing that. We could purchase an easement with that money. We could get water and power and so on up at Stadium Park. And they're going to have to do a lot of selling to get my vote. You know, maybe the votes are already here. I don't know. But it's too much money, folks. It's not usable. It's not buildable, and I don't think it's a good idea at all to get involved.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
Yes, thank you. Can you tell me when the Open Space Acquisition Fund was established?
In 2003 with the development of the fee schedule.
And would this be the first time it's utilized for purchase of open space?
Yes, it is.
All right, thank you.
I'd also point out that there's almost $500,000 in tree planting fund. Councilmember Burrow?
If we use the $200,000 from the open space acquisition fund, how much is left in there after we take out the $200,000? Do we know that figure? Okay,
I don't know it off the top of my head.
I have the next budget, the 2007-2008 2009 budget, and in 2007-2008, it has open space acquisition of $311,534, estimated on July the 1st of this year. So I don't know that's before or after the $200,000. Before the $200,000.
So we'll still have some money left over for horses and people to enjoy the creek. I'd like to hear from Alps.
Well, I'd like to clarify something. If we acquired an easement to Stadium Park, would that not be an open space acquisition?
Yes, it would be. You'd be acquiring property for city use.
Thank you. And the other thing that I'd just like to say is that, you know, it's taxpayers' money, folks. It's, you know, it's a lot of money. It's too darn much money for that property. It will sit there for 100 years, and no one will do nothing with it.
So closer to the council, I will interject that that the city is in negotiation with property owners for an easement into Stadium Park. I don't want to, Mr. Clay, to give you the impression that that we're not. And it's one of the reasons why we didn't go forward with the development of the improvements in Stadium Park, because we're not sure exactly what the size of the easement will be. But with that, I'll open it to the public. And Mr. Chisholm, is he, if you'd speak first as president of Alps. And if anyone else wants to speak on this item, please line up behind Mr. Chisholm. Dr. Chisholm, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council members. My name is Doug Chisholm. I'm speaking to you tonight on behalf of the Atascadero Land Preservation Society, commonly known as ALPS. Our request for $250,000 from the city's tree fund and open space acquisition fund to assist in the purchase of the Davis property off Highway 41 on the southwestern border of Atascadero is a request for money that is already set aside for purposes such as this. If approved, this $250,000 will be leveraged into about 8 times that much because of ALPS efforts to secure grant funding to purchase the land in question and to establish an endowment fund for ongoing maintenance and stewardship of the land through public fundraising and other grant sources. I may be biased because I and other ALPS board members have worked so hard to make this happen, but it seems to me that this project represents an opportunity for our community, which has become so polarized recently, to come together in support of a common goal that will benefit all segments of our population. The bottom line is that this is an opportunity for the city to turn $250,000 that has already been earmarked through foresight over the years for preservation of open space and forest land into approximately $2 million worth of benefit for the citizens of Atascadero. I trust that you have all had an opportunity to review the staff report and the ALPS grant request to the State of California Resources Agency for a $1.5 million grant. More than 130 grant requests totaling over $80 million were made for the $32.5 million that will be available. We have passed the first round of application cut, and it will be a wonderful investment for the citizens of our city now and for generations to come. Rather than duplicate information now that you already have in front of you, I will close here, but I would be glad to try to answer any questions that you or members of the public may have. Thank you for considering this request.
Thank you, Dr. Chisholm. Dr. Chisholm, Councilmember Clay has a question.
In regards to appraisals, determining the value, how did you go about doing that?
The Trust for Public Land, which has extensive experience in dealing with transactions such as this, has been the agency that has been dealing with the Davis property about that. ALPS has not been in direct contact with the Davis family about this. There will be an appraisal done The price cannot go above the 1.7. There's a possibility that it could go below that. If I can add this while we're talking about price, you mentioned earlier that the land would probably sit there forever if not purchased. I want to point out that part of our goal is to make the land available to the public in the form of trails and handicapped accessibility for some of the beautiful land that's on the flatter part of that land.
Another question is, so you're saying if the appraisal came in at $1 million, say, then you wouldn't need our money. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that. I don't think I said that.
Well, you said that the appraisal would come in lower, it would be a lower price.
I did not say that. I said there's a possibility that it could. I don't know the details of the negotiations between the Trust for Public Land and the Davis family.
So what if the appraisal did come in lower? What would happen then? That's the question.
I don't know. I would hope that we would be able to negotiate, that TPL would be able to negotiate the price lower.
My question is, did the Davises put the price on the property? Was that the way it went down, or you don't know?
The Davises put the price on the property and spoke with representatives of Trust for Public Land.
Right. I see. And then my other question is are any ALPS members members themselves putting any money into this project?
Yes.
And what amount might that be?
I personally am putting $1,000 into the endowment fund. We're establishing an endowment fund as part of the process. We hope to have as much as a couple of $100,000 that we'll be able to draw from on an annual basis to provide for maintenance and ongoing stewardship of the land.
So what are you at now, figure-wise?
We have been raising money for a week and a half, and we have over $13,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chisholm.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Marty Brown. I live at 8455 Graves Creek Road. I would like to compliment the city for the Upper Salinas River Corridor Enhancement Project. The teamwork between our city, Resource Conservation District, ALPS, California Conservation Corps, Planning and Conservation League, and Atascadero Historical Society became aware of this property in October of 2006. At that time, I wrote to Dougal Chisholm, president of ALPS, and told him that I thought the acquisition would be a wonderful addition to the Atascadero Creek project. This area is an important wildlife corridor in connection to Cerro Alto in the Los Padres National Forest. It also includes a tributary of the Salinas River. I committed to help maintain the trails that would be established and whatever else I could do to help preserve this special place. I have my check here for $100 to donate to ALPS toward the goal. I also want to comment on the planting of 50 coastal live oaks in the Heilman Grove near the water treatment plant on Garbata Avenue. I believe ANTA, the Eagle Scouts, and the city of Atascadero work together on this project. This will help toward lowering our CO2 emissions and become another beautiful addition to our city. Unlike Mike Jackson, I don't want to cut down trees to save water. We're not only on a different page, we're in a completely different library as far as this is concerned. And lastly, I want to say to Council Members Brenler and Bayrou that they have my respect, trust, and support. They have executed their responsibilities with integrity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
I'm Joan O'Keefe, Atascadero, and I am the president of the Atascadero Native Tree Association. The board voted unanimously to support this project. We originally thought that we would be making the complete contribution of $250,000. So I'm pleased to see that it's only $50,000, which will leave more money for future acquisition as well as tree planting. To give you some idea of how many trees are removed, I would say about 1,000 trees equals about $250,000. And for those people in the audience who don't know, although I think most of them do, that the tree ordinance does require that if you cut down native trees, you either have to pay mitigation or there's some other alternate ways of doing this. of mitigating it. One of the parcels is zoned rural residential. It has entitlements. So at some point, that parcel would definitely be developed. Also, the future, the present owner at one time was planning to come in to have it rezoned. Now, I don't care what the ordinances say, what the general plan says. All it takes is three votes on the council to change the zoning and to approve lots like that to be built. And what I frequently hear from the development community, there's no lot that you can't build on. This has put a lot of potential for habitat, and I'm hoping that I have not been on the site, but we do know that there is very little regeneration with blue oak and valley oak occurring. This is not a valley oak site. It's a blue oak site. I'm hoping that we can do some planting of blue oak if and when the purchase goes through. I was also shocked to see a buy-in from the community, so they do expect some money. And finally, I want to express my appreciation to John Elias Dennis. It's my understanding that she really spearheaded this and kept it going. She kept on all of this. When it was first started, I wrote a letter from ANTA, and then, of course, there was a subsequent one for using the tree mitigation funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe.
I'm Eric Greening, and I enthusiastically support the proposed action. We need to understand that none of the local match is city general fund or tax money. It's all from fees, and those fees are actually a favor and a convenience to the people who pay them. When they're developing, when they're cutting down trees, they do so with negative declarations unless they do very large and complicated projects. They get those negative declarations on the basis that impacts that they may have on site as a result of their development and tree removals are being mitigated. This allows us to see exactly how those mitigations are happening. This preserves land that could otherwise be developed. As the previous speaker said, it could happen through building on the site that could be built on. It could happen through a rezone, an upzone. Anything can happen until or unless it is permanently preserved as open space, and that is what is proposed to happen here. The local match then leverages statewide tax money, and the use of that statewide tax money was by a vote of the people. The will of the people has been expressed in Proposition 50. This is thoroughly in line with the intent of the people, and this allows us, the people of Atascadero, to benefit from this statewide program by leveraging with a small amount of our fees to receive the rest from the state. The comparison with Stadium Park, I just want to observe that we wouldn't even be talking about how we're going to develop Stadium Park if we didn't own Stadium Park, if the city didn't own Stadium Park. The city wouldn't own Stadium Park if it were not for Alps. It was Alps that spearheaded that acquisition, that located the transportation enhancement funding, worked with the Council of Governments to get half the purchase price from that grant and raised the rest locally. In good time, we will make the plan for Stadium Park and then implement it. We first need to finish the negotiations. All that will happen in good order. This doesn't compete with Stadium Park. This uses funds that are available now to create something that couldn't otherwise happen. It's not in any way competing with Stadium Park. Stadium Park shouldn't be held against it. It shouldn't be held against Stadium Park. What it does do is provide biological mitigation and benefit from how that mitigation is taking place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening.
Hello, my name is Bruce Boniface. I'm an ALPS board member, and I'm proud to say I've been participated in volunteer projects for the city of Atascadero for over 20 years. I urge you strongly to support the dedication of the money towards the acquisition of this property. I don't have the tree fund language in front of me, but I know that it identifies acquisition as a major benefit of having the tree fund. I don't keep track of the real estate values today, but I'm not sure what $250,000 can buy within the city of Atascadero. I don't think it can buy more than 2 or 3 acres. If we can leverage $250,000 and buy 103 acres and make it publicly accessible with a trail system that accommodates hikers, bikers, horseback riders, and we even have a dream to have an ADA accessible trail near the down near one of the bridges that's on fairly flat ground that we can develop and bring in folks that that can benefit from that. It seems to me like it's a tremendous use of the money that the city has a discretionary power over, and I strongly urge you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boniface.
Good evening, Mayor Luna and members of the City Council. I'm Geraldine Brazier, Famister of Atascadero, and a board member of the Atascadero Land Preservation Society since 1992. Our purpose is to acquire pristine open space in the city of Atascadero, then maintain it for passive public use in the present time and for generations to come. Since our inception, and with broad public support, we have financially assisted the city in acquiring Stadium Park. We purchased land next to Stadium Park to preserve its oak and pine woodlands, and we purchased or were deeded portions of Atascadero Creekway to help preserve the riparian vegetation and enhance steelhead regeneration. The 103-acre property bordering Atascadero Creek would be a magnificent addition to Atascadero's fast-dwindling inventory of open space. We hope that you agree with us and grant us funds from the two funds in order to help acquire this land for the people of Atascadero and the many visitors who are attracted by our rural ambiance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brazier.
My name is Ray Lockhead, and I'm the owner of the property next to this acreage you're talking about. It's the home of my daughter, son-in-law, and three grandchildren. And I'm wondering, I just heard about it this morning, the first I heard about it. I haven't really had a chance to digest all of the information, but I would certainly like a little time to think it over. I didn't even have a chance to bid on the property myself. Maybe I did and didn't know about it. So what's the rush? How about giving me an extra week or 2 weeks? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lockhead.
Thank you. At times, being a member of ANTA and seeing how slowly these funds accumulate when you see trees dropping like flies, It's frustrating because you think it's a pittance of what their value really is. But over time, and now that we're lucky enough to have just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of homes going in the last few years, we are accumulating some significant funds. This is an opportunity to do the best that you possibly could do with funds that are put aside for this exact reason. How are you going to leverage funds like this to multiply times 8? This is really a good opportunity. It's choice, priceless thing. And the one thing about how much is a tree worth, you can't really say what a tree's worth. You can't say what the beauty of Atascadero is worth when you consider these trees. But you do have an opportunity to use money, to put some aside, make sure it's done the right way by the right people. And I really urge you to all do this. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Steve Tillman, your friendly neighborhood activist. I'd like to comment, and I don't know how many lifetimes it would take to aspire to the greatness of some of the people I mentioned earlier, but I feel it's safe to say that It would take more than I would ever have. But I would like to read from two other activists on this subject as I encourage the City Council to do what's right for the future of people who are not here yet. And I want to go back to that activist Republican and the 26th President of the United States, who, again, I will never aspire to his greatness. In his opinion, the defenders of the short-sighted men who in their greed and selfishness will, if permitted, rob our country of half its charm by the reckless extermination of all useful and beautiful wild things sometimes seek to champion them by saying, the game belongs to the people. So it does. But not merely to the people now alive, but to the unborn people. The greatest good for the greatest number applies to the number within the womb of time, compared to which those now alive form but an insignificant fraction. Our duty to the whole, including the unborn generations, bid us restrain an unprincipled present-day minority from wasting the heritage of these unborn generations. The movement for the conservation of wildlife and the larger movement for the conservation of all of our natural resources are essentially democratic in spirit, in purpose, and in method. The 26th President of the United States said that, a Republican. And that Republican is responsible for 230 million acres of open space that's creating the air I'm breathing to make this statement. 230 million acres divided by 7.5 years in office, folks, is an average of 87,000 acres a day. We're fighting over 15 feet on a creek setback. We're talking about Teddy Roosevelt created 150 national forests, 51 federal bird reservations, 4 national game parks, 5 national parks, 18 national monuments, and 24 reclamation projects. Not bad for one person. And I'd like to read from one other activist who I will never hope to aspire to in town, who's too humble to come here tonight, to say something that he spoke to me about the other day. And he says, I walked the property yesterday morning, and I must admit, I trespassed about 100 feet onto it so I could see it. It's beautiful. We've heard a lot lately about our general plan. I wonder how many have actually looked at it. I invite you all to consider Section 2E entitled Land Use, Open Space, and Conservation Goals and Policies. And there you'll find, among other statements, preserve natural flora and fauna and protect scenic lands, sensitive natural areas, historic buildings, cultural resources that ensure development does not degrade historic sites, creeks, riparian areas, and wetlands. This is precisely what the proposed action will accomplish. And I commend the present City Council for having the courage and the vision to implement and adhere to our general plan. For this is the general plan for all of Atascadero, not my Atascadero, not your Atascadero, but our Atascadero. And this person is an activist. He teaches, he basically spends quite a bit of his free time helping Atascadero's high schoolers understand a really difficult concept called calculus. And he's a cash donor to ALPS. Does that make him an activist we shouldn't believe in? I would argue that the people I've just read about just now have a lot more to say about how we spend this money than I ever could.
Thank you, Mr. Tillman.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, neighbors, I came here tonight prepared to speak against this scheme to buy this land. However, I've changed my mind.
Can you state your name?
And I think it would be constructive.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, I got all excited and I jumped ahead. Pardon me.
We apologize.
My name is Chuck Ward. I live in Atascadero. Wife and I live on El Corte Road. Putting the needle back on the record. When I first heard about this, I thought to myself, good gosh, I can stand on my tiptoes and look around 360 degrees, and all I see is open space.
this is not Bayonne, New Jersey, where we just had to, you know, go out and buy something. So we have this little piece of green. We're surrounded by it. So I thought to myself, why do we need it? Well, this morning, I read Ron Allen's column, as many of you did, and he made some very good points, as he always does in his columns. And I was swayed the other way. And I turned on the radio today, and I heard some comments that caused me to think about this. Number one, how can the city say they don't have enough money for the Stadium Park project improvements, and then on the other hand, come up with $250,000 to preserve the stream and the steelhead? I thought the 35-foot setback was supposed to do that, and that the acquisition of land was not an issue. Well, that's sort of fuzzy up there, but I don't think it weighed either way. The main issue I have, and I think Councilman Clay brought it up, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary tonight, is, has there been an objective market evaluation of what this land is actually worth? And I think at some point that should be done. And if it comes out lower, it raises a good question. Does that money come out of the state grant, or does that money come out of the funds that the city is putting forward? And I think that's a fair question. But in my mind, those couple of questions were not enough to override my belief that this is a good project for the city. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ward.
I'm Margie Mackey. I live underneath it, and I've been interested in, I'm a board member of ALPS. I have a copy of the general plan from 1980, and it says about this property, areas of open space that shall be considered for acquisition by a public agency and are preserved for recreation are listed below. And the first one is the Chandler Parkland, which is the property we're talking about now. The next one is Pine Mountain Amphitheater. Well, we do own the amphitheater, Stadium Park, and we need to own this 103 acres. In the beginning, Gordon said he would give us 200 acres out there if we became a city. Well, he kept dangling it in front of me all those years. And he finally called and said one day, it's time that I give that land to the city. So do something about it, Marge. Well, I called Ray Belknap because I said, ALPS has never accepted anything like this. And so I called Ray Belknap, who's the San Luis County Conservation. Anyway, he had the flu at the time. And I made an appointment a little later on, and I called Gordon before we had the appointment with Ray, and Gordon said, no, I've changed my mind. I'll give it to the library. So that was the end of that, and that was just before he died, and I don't believe he died of natural causes. But anyway, I believe that this is a good way to spend the money that the city has on hand. As everybody else has said, it's a good investment.
To share with you folks, this is just a list of general plan sections and policies that relate to this project.
John Lee, can we have your name for the record, please?
Oh, sorry. I'm John Lee Astinis, and I just Section 2, land use, open space, and conservation were mentioned in the staff report with nothing to do with the circulation element. And so those areas where the general plan affects this property I've listed for you. If you're not familiar with it, I'm sure you can get staff to answer any questions you might have. And also some information having to do with liability issues in the state of California, a study done. Okay. The passing out of papers doesn't count against my minute, does it?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm Jana Lee Astinis, an ALPS board member and Parks and Recreation Commissioner. We have worked to try to keep your staff abreast of progress on this purchase. This project was brought to the city first more than a year ago, but as you may be aware, your Parks and Recreation Department is severely understaffed and underfunded. And your staff recommended Atascadero Land Preservation Society as a better steward of this property than they would be at this time. The land is zoned recreational, but it is close to the public. It's actually named Chandler Parkland as land that was set aside from a previous development of the Chandler Branch. This has been for sale for at least 7 years. The sign is faded, so anyone who wished to purchase this property, the sign has been up ever since I've lived here. The Davis family has done a considerable amount of development and is still invested in this community. ALPS is working to purchase this parkland by competing for state grant acts funds, but needs to demonstrate local support for this project. There's an ongoing fundraiser, Lon Allen's write-up you heard about. Brochures are available for anyone who would like to contribute. ALPS intends to set up an endowment for maintenance and utilize volunteer groups among the park users. Projects with funding in place by May 30th will be in a superior position to be awarded the grant funds. This project fits within the goals of the oak tree protection and open space, and the funds requested from the city are mitigation funds from oak woodland destruction. Okay. This project fits with state's parkway programs, protecting and preserving open space while providing recreational opportunities, hiking, biking, horseback riding, as well as potential for limited ADA access. This parcel connects to the Eagle Ranch, which is planned for annexation and development within the next few years. The general plan shows plans for trails for those citizens. This parcel also abuts county property and is shown connecting to the greater county trails plans. Connectivity is important, and these parcels have that. These parcels will add to the open space needs that needs to be preserved as Atascadero, our city, by approving this ALPS request for $250,000 of tree mitigation and open space funds. Please review the grant application if you've not already done so for letters of support from the District 5 Supervisor Jim Patterson, Assemblyman Sam Blakesley, Director of Community Services Brady Cherry, County Parks Planner Jan DeLeo, Atascadero Chamber of Commerce President Joan Main, Atascadero Native Tree Association President Joan O'Keefe, Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District Executive Director Donald Funk, Amigos de Anza SLO County Co-Chair Myra Douglas, North County Trails Association Kathy Hustis. There is support from the horse community as well as biking community and hiking community. Thank you.
Thank you, General Lee.
Oh, and in response, since I have, 20 seconds?
You're in the negative now.
Oh, well, homes, okay, this is really quick because this has to do with Mr. Clay's questions. Homes are being approved with 50% grade. Remember the project with 200 feet of six foot high retaining wall at the top of the hills with significant removal of oaks? I think that project was called Choplin, just recently approved.
Choplin.
That had 55% grade. Mr. Clay, you need to consider that this is leveraging $1.5 million. This land will sit for years, yet no one, and you said no one will do anything with it as open space, but it's zoned recreational, yet there's no recreational use allowed at this time. And it is in your general plan to acquire parks for your citizens.
Thank you, General Lee.
Thank you.
And thank you for the assistance with the applications.
Dave Graham, 7350 Santa Isabel. I just wanted to make one point, and that is really when I was a young returning Vietnam War vet, I went to see John Enos, anyway, the Veterans Service Officer, and he was very nice in helping me to get veterans benefits for attending First Cuesta College and then later on Cal Poly. And I thought it was rather curious that the county didn't charge me anything for that service. You know, they were, and so I talked to John about it anyway. And he said basically that he saw his job as bringing money from outside the county into the county. And that's why he helped the veterans that were living here, because it brought money that otherwise wouldn't have been here. And I think this is an opportunity here where you have $1.5 million that's going to come into our community from outside. That money will circulate and certainly be a boost for our economy. That's really the only other argument that I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Good evening. I'm Don Blasey. I live on Arizona Avenue here in Atascadero. And I just wanted to get a couple of clarifications if I could. First of all, I think this sounds like an awfully good plan. So hopefully it goes through. But I heard one statement that none of this comes from the general funds, and I know $50,000 from the tree fund, but isn't open space money come from the general funds, and maybe that can be clarified. Secondly, it was mentioned that developers have an either-or, you know, mitigations if they cut down trees or pay into the tree fund, and the project on Choplin was just mentioned. In that case, the developer is having to pay the fund as well as having notice for this meeting. And I guess my last point is that what assurances do we have that this will be used for public use? I have yet to see any public use of Stadium Park. So if we're going to do this so that we can have public use, then I would hope that we have some assurances that that will actually happen. And again, I say that, you know, other than that, I think this is a very good use of the funds to buy this property. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blasey.
My name is Livia Kellerman. I just want to point out that it seems Atascadero is always concerned about drawing people to Atascadero. And this 103 acres would very much draw a lot of hikers and bikers and families and those that love the old swimming hole. And the word is going to get around that there's this place that there's extensive hiking. And that would people have to eat. People may want to go to a movie. People may want to repair their bike. Possibly whatever associated with hiking and picnicking and what have you will draw people to the area and may want to go to a movie at night or whatever. And I think that that's great that we not only have a draw to Atascadero, but the people here have something incredible that they really will enjoy. And the gentleman before me said that, or at least I understood that Stadium Park, I have yet to see Stadium Park used by the public. I see Stadium Park used all the time by the public. And we've even had concerts there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kellerman.
Good evening, Mayor Luna and council members. My name is Pamela Hetherington, and I'm a Atascadero resident. But what I'm going to talk to you about tonight has to do with San Luis Obispo. I've been a docent for the city of San Luis Obispo for the last 7 years. And I take great advantage of their open space and greenbelt areas and leading people on hikes to these beautiful places. Some of these places you can't go unless you go with a docent, like the Gaddetti Ranch, which was an easement bought by the city of San Luis Obispo. They're experts at this type of thing, and it just warms my heart and brings great joy to finally see my community partaking in this. But I also want to talk to you as a health commissioner for the county of San Luis Obispo. One of our focuses for the last year and a half has been on obesity and how much we need open space and trails and recreation areas in order for our youth to not get diabetes, to not suffer from chronic disease. $250,000 is one case of child diabetes. So I think with all of the things that have been said before I came up here tonight, and adding these two, I hope that you vote positively for this investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hetherington.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Fred Frank. I've lived here for 70 years. I would just like to lean at drainage that still has steelhead. And when we went up there the other day, and this has been a dry season, we were looking over some of the part of the property down along the stream, the riparian area, and it was just spectacular. This is a mountain stream rippling through underneath the sycamores, and to see trout rising in the stream still, it was breathtaking. And this would be a great buy at $2 million. So we should really go after this in a very aggressively. And I'm sure that you will support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Franks. Just before you come up, Doug, is there anyone else who wants to speak on this item? Okay, Doug, I have a question for you. Oh, did you raise your hand, David? No, go ahead. We want to take care of those people who haven't spoken yet.
My name is David Broadwater. I've been up on this land walking around, and I really support the staff proposal and this whole idea. I think it's a wise investment, long-term investment. I can't really add much to what the folks from Alps and others have said here who know so much and have done so much more about it, which I haven't. I'm not a member of any organizations at all except for the United States of America as a citizen. One of the things that I would hope that you would clarify, it's been stated by one of the members of the City Council, is this is taxpayer money, folks. Well, could you please explain to folks what's taxpayer money? As I understand, as Eric Greening has pointed out, this comes from Proposition 50, a state law, so therefore it's statewide taxpayer money that has been committed through the democratic process and the approval of Proposition 50 to put these funds together for just this type of purpose. And secondly, I understand money comes from the tree mitigation fund, which is when people chop down trees for development, that money is donated to this, so that's not tax money. So I'm wondering how much is really local property, you know, local tax money. When you just say blanketly, this is, you know, taxpayer money, folks, that's just not true. So would you please spell out what portions, percentages, you know, amounts are really local taxpayer money and what comes from the state and what comes from the mitigations? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broadwater. Seeing no other speakers, I have a question for you, Doug. Maybe you want to take care of any of the questions that you heard that...
Either way you want to do it.
Well, let me ask a question first, and that is Stadium Park. There was some discussion about this project and how are we assured that the trails will be put in. And I know that that Alps was not only instrumental in getting Stadium Park itself, the bowl, but also in... the acquisition of the Kennedy property, and on the Kennedy property, I believe you have a trail, a public trail. And what are the restrictions on the use of that trail?
There are no restrictions. It's there for the public. We contracted with the California Conservation Corps to build the trail. We've also supported two Eagle Scout projects. We're really amazed and astounded by the acoustics of the area. And so they had some top name bluegrass and country talent come in for those festivals. Unfortunately, they had to put a lot of money into it, and they didn't get as much out. Part of it was due to weather issues, so they're not able to continue that anymore. There have been a couple of smaller events put on in there by Alps through the years as well. The first one spearheaded by Marge Mackey, one of our ex-mayors, and who spoke earlier. And they've been attended by maybe 100 to 150 people. Somebody else mentioned seeing Stadium Park used by the public. I live near Stadium Park, and there are hikers and bicycle riders going through there and up to the top of Pine Mountain all the time. I think I'm speaking personally here, not as a member of Alps. I think the council was wise in its choice a couple of years ago to trade development credits for the top of Pine Mountain to extend the publicly owned land from Stadium Park up over the top of Pine Mountain. And there's also, since then, there's been trail built to the top of Pine Mountain that is walkable by anybody in reasonably good physical condition. And I believe that's been done without expense to the city. I'm not sure about that.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay has a question.
Yes. In regards to the three events, were you not the recipient, ALPS, the recipient of any funds that
we benefited from it from the beer and alcohol sales.
Yes. Yeah, and you know,
and we would have benefited further had there been any profit from the event, Mr. Clay.
But one thing that was brought out when we talked about Stadium Park was that there has been seven events in 12 years, and that's not exactly a whole lot. You know, I'd like to see it used more. But while you're still up there, someone said that we've assured, now that we've assured the Stadium Park easement, is that what we've done?
No, I said we're in negotiations.
Well, in negotiation, but evidently they took it that it's assured that we'll have an easement to, yeah. Did you not hear the man say that he was assured that Stadium?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure what he said, but he reassured that we're working on it. I mean, it's something that isn't going to be dropped.
But it's going to
isn't being dropped.
It's going to cost some money for the easement, that's my point. And
well, I think it's something in negotiations, closed session, and we shouldn't be talking about it.
I don't know anything about it, George. That's all.
Any other questions? Okay.
There were a couple of other points from speakers that I might like to address. It was very heartening to me to hear a couple of speakers say that they came here prepared to oppose this issue and have been swayed. There were a couple of points made, and Mr. Clay brought up one of them that, you know, I've had a little question about myself. One is the cost of the property. It has been on the market for quite a while.
7 years.
Right, and nobody has purchased it. So you can question whether the asking price is worth it or not. Mr. Lockhead have this as part of the city's public space for a long time, but the city has not had the money to do it. Here we have an opportunity to spend a little bit of money to get a lot of value. So I hope that we can get a unanimous vote on this tonight.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other points. You'd asked about how the valuation was made. And in the grant application, which I hope you've all had a chance to read, Trust for Public Land has estimated, there's a question from the grant process. Explain your method for estimating costs and how your project is cost effective. Trust for Public Lands has estimated the fair market value of the 103-acre Atascadero Street Creek property at $1.75 million. This estimation is based on TPL's extensive real estate transaction work, including several acquisitions in San Luis Obispo County. So it is based on that. I don't know, as I said before, the inner workings of the deal that's going on, but I do believe that this is a really good value. With regard to the question of appraisal, also in the grant application, which you've all had a chance to look at, there's a project timeline. Preliminary title report was to be ordered in December 2006 or whenever the option agreement was signed. The estimated receipt of the report was to be January 2007. That is on hold at this point, as is the appraisal, but the appraisal will be done shortly after this process, which will hopefully be successful. There will also be an environmental review, which is part of the grant process, which is to be completed, the estimated completion in the grant application, that's spring 2007. That's awaiting what happens with the grant itself. The estimated date for acquisition and close of escrow would be spring of 2008.
Councilmember Clay has a question.
I have a question about the appraisal. You know, there's appraisals and there's appraisals, right? And some appraisals are done just to justify the price, and other appraisals are done to put the actual price of the property. And so I wonder what kind of appraisal we're going to have.
I don't know, but I do. Trust for Public Land has a very, very strong record in these kinds of dealings, and I really trust their expertise. I will say that they are covering the cost of the appraisal. That's in the acquisition cost estimates that is on the land acquisitions form in the grant application. I know from having bought a house and an office building that the appraisals do tend to come back pretty darn close to what everybody's agreed to pay. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the council. Councilmember Burrow.
I'm ready to make brief comments and a motion if there's no further comments from other council members.
Sure. We can have discussion.
I'd do much better than that. The fact that it's a Blue Oak site, I think, is very important. Our recent tree inventory has told us that this is a species of oak that's endangered and will be a great place to do plantings. Public access and recreation. Yes, we all have scenic vistas outside our door, but most of that is in private hands. We need to make sure some of that is in public hands. And with those comments, I'd like to make the motion that we adopt staff's recommendation. Number one, to approve the request for funds from the Atascadero Land Preservation Society in the amount of $250,000 to cover the remainder of the purchase price for the Davis property at Highway 41 near the Three Bridges, and authorize the Administrative Services Director to appropriate $50,000 from the Tree Fund and $200,000 from the Open Space Acquisition Fund to cover the remainder of the purchase price for the Davis property. Authorize the city manager to execute a deed of conservation easement and agreement concerning easement rights with the Atascadero Land Preservation Society to guarantee open space status on this property in perpetuity.
I'll second.
Got a motion by Councilmember Barroa, second by Mayor Pro Tem Brendler for the staff recommendation. And now we'll deal with discussion on the motion.
Sure.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
My only comment is that a city contribution of roughly 14% of the asking price will leverage $1.5 million in grant money, and it certainly would be a tragedy to lose such an opportunity.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes, I think when Proposition 50 went through, they didn't say that the people wanted to pay more than what the property is worth. And I'm all for trails. I love Maguan myself, but I don't think that we should, pay more than what that property is worth. And if it's been on the market for 7 years, it hasn't sold. The price, the asking price, and was below this if the source that I have is right. And I can't understand why we'd want to pay more for property just because it's Proposition 50 money and so on. The other thing is, you know, comments are made about developers and this thing and that. Teddy Roosevelt, I know he preserved a lot of federal land, which was great. The Blue Oaks, the man that did the inventory on our trees stated that in your lifetime, you're lucky if the Blue Oaks regenerate once in your lifetime. That's a normal cycle for them. And he also stated that the urban areas, he was impressed, and that was what I call the old town area, how well the trees are doing, both native and non-native trees. And he made that statement, and I watched it twice, folks. So, and then we never give credit to the blue jays and the squirrels and the quail and everything. They're planting trees all the time. There's not one of you out there that's responsible for one tree up on that west side. I'm going to tell you right now, it was all done by nature, and nature's still at work. But I can't support the price of the property. So that's where I'm at. I think it's too much. I think it's just a sweetheart deal for the Davis.
the development on Choplin, that's an issue that's going to come before the council, and so the less said, the better. The proposition money that was talked about is bond money, and I think that the Trust for Public Lands has an excellent reputation for negotiating good prices, and I think that if the value of the property is less than the $1.75 million that's proposed, I think that probably they'll get a good deal, and I'm sure that we will also get a good deal. There's a number of, I just want to read some sections out of the general plan that haven't been talked about. One of them is seek funding to purchase or require dedication of areas of unique habitats or value, especially in areas lacking adequate park facilities and open space. This fits that. Encourage the acquisition of open space in sensitive lands beyond the ratio of 5 acres per 1,000 residents. And then there's the smart growth principles. Recognize and preserve critical areas of open space, environmental habitats. And the smart growth principle number 7 in the general plan, which says, take advantage of opportunities to form partnerships with private businesses and nonprofit agencies to maximize the community benefit of existing public and private facilities. This fits that. So I'm going to support this, and with that, I'll call the question.
Councilmember.
Okay. I had one other comment.
Go ahead.
Well, you said that if the appraisal comes in lower, are you saying that they're going to give back our $250,000, or what is it, George?
You know, we got a motion on the floor, okay. Doug, and I think that probably that is an argumentative question that we are not going to get into.
There's something in the grant application that directly addresses that, and I have not done a good job of informing you.
Okay.
About that.
And just one other comment. The property was for sale for 7 years in one of the hottest markets that this county has ever seen, and it didn't sell, and it was at a lower price.
Doug, you want to quickly?
Yes. I'm looking at the letter from Davis Land Corporation signed by Catherine Davis. This is the willing selling letter that's in the grant application that you had an opportunity to look at. And I was remiss in not pointing this out to you earlier and being more specific about it. But it says, quote, should grant funds be awarded, and possibly by the time grant funds are awarded, the owners represented by Davis Land Company will enter into an agreement for the sale of the property to TPL for a purchase price not to exceed the property's appraised fair market value, end quote. And for the purposes of the grant, the sale is to the Trust for Public Land. Trust for Public Land will be transferring the property to us directly.
Thank you, Doug. We lost a council person, so we're going to take a 5-minute break and come back and vote on this motion. Management reports number 2, resale of moderate inclusionary housing unit at 8985 Casson Court. Warren?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Let me bring up the presentation. Okay.
If I could just interrupt you for a minute, did somebody lose their keys? Oh.
You look like.
Community Development Director Warren Fraze will give their staff report.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item before you tonight is a little bit of a unique item. Normally, we wouldn't put this sort of thing on a special meeting like this, but there was an urgency due to a potential sale of the unit, and we felt that it was basically an emergency-type situation. That's why we did put it on the agenda tonight for you. The question tonight is, this is dealing with one of our deed-restricted, moderate-income, affordable units located 8985 Quezon Court. We're considering our option to purchase this unit in that this unit is currently for sale. The project site is located along Portola Road, along Quezon Court. It's next to Highway 101. This is a track that was built in 2004 as a combination. It was a PD project, so some of the units were required to be inclusionary affordable units. This is one of those inclusionary affordable units. So this is a picture of the property as it exists today. So the history of the property is that this was purchased by the current owner in June of 2004. It was deed restricted to the moderate income level. It was under our original inclusionary program that we instituted right after the general plan update. It's different from our current plan. Our current inclusionary plan has the ability for the owners to buy out or sell out with an equity sharing program. So this is an older program that isn't as sophisticated as our current program. That is one of the hang-ups that the owners run into on this property. So the owner needs to sell the house for personal reasons. She contacted staff early in May about the need to sell the house. Staff's been working with her to try to address the concerns. Staff determined about a week and a half ago that staff couldn't address the concerns, that only the council could address the concerns, and that's when we determined that it needed to be agendized for your review. When this unit was originally purchased in June of 2004, the sales price for a moderate income unit was $315,000. Now that the owner needs to sell, the issue we have is that the moderate sales price has now decreased or fallen to $285,000. The main reason that's occurred is due to the increase in interest rates. So the affordability level, we actually use the County of San Luis Obispo's affordability standards, and they calculate these on a monthly basis, and it's these numbers are based on what the income levels are within the county for a moderate income person versus the interest rates in terms of what is affordable for a person making a certain amount of money to purchase the unit to be sold in the future at a market rate with an equity sharing agreement with the city. We would have a silent second, so the city would be able to capture a lot of the equity that currently exists within this unit. And one of the benefits right now is there is a qualified buyer that is ready to purchase this unit. So if we were to exercise our options here and purchase the unit, we would have an immediate seller as part of that. So the period of time that we would be out, our money would be very limited. In terms of the fiscal analysis, we believe this unit will appraise for between $400,000 and $500,000. We would purchase the unit for $325,000. That would give us an equity, that silent second that we currently hold on other affordable units, somewhere in the neighborhood of $75,000 to $175,000. What would happen is that the buyer would end up buying the unit from us for $285,000. The remaining equity there would be carried as a silent second, which is part of our existing program. Then we would end up with that equity share. So the second buyer, if he chooses to sell, he could sell at a market rate, but we would end up getting back this $115,000 to $215,000 in equity. So in the long run, this would actually be a pretty good deal for the city. In terms of the future, you know, how many other units are potentially out there like this? There's approximately 40 units that were under the old program. So there is a possibility there's some other ones that might have similar impacts or concerns in the future, and that's something that staff's aware of. We're, you know, monitoring. There are some other issues where some people have taken out additional equity loans that may have put them in a jeopardy position as well, and those are just situations we're working on. So currently this proposal really is just for this site. We're only looking at this as a one-time scenario for this site. We're hoping that all the other future units will be able to follow what the current established regulations are. So in terms of the alternatives that are before the council tonight, beyond what we're recommending, which is we buy the unit and then resell it, we could allow the unit to sell for the market rate, whatever that is, and then have the owner pay us whatever the equity back to us would be terms of in lieu fees. That would be a little unusual. It would basically break the existing agreement. It would no longer be an affordable unit. And it would have to negotiate some sort of share on the in lieu fees or the equity that would be captured from that sale. The second option would be just to require the unit to be sold for what the current deed restriction says, which is $285,000. That would be a $31,000 loss to the current owner. So it's likely that the unit actually wouldn't sell. It would probably go into some sort of default or foreclosure, and it's possible that we would end up with no recapture of anything in that case. So that isn't a recommended alternative. In terms of recommendations, there's four steps to the recommendation before the council tonight. The first would be to authorize the city manager to purchase the unit. In your resolution, it says $321,000. We need to actually make that $325,000 to cover the closing costs. Second would be to authorize the city manager to then resell that unit under the provisions of our current inclusionary housing program.
Councilmember Clay has a question.
Yeah, Warren, how much has the interest rate gone up? I keep, seeing these things on TV, 5 point this and so on and so forth. So how did that happen?
Well, we don't actually calculate. The county does the calculations, and what they've told us is that the benchmarks that they use have gone up substantially, or at least a percent or so in the last 4 years, and that's what's been the majority of the decrease in what that sales price is.
I see. And then as far as if we just let it go to foreclosure, then basically we're just out of the picture, and is that what you're saying? We don't spend the $35,000, we don't...
Yeah, it's our understanding when these things go into foreclosure, then the deed restrictions basically get erased, and whoever the foreclosing agency is then can just sell it at market rate. They'll end up recapturing all the lost income. So the city will be out the money, and the current owner will be out of the money, and we won't have an affordable unit to sell to anybody else. The only party that will benefit will be whoever is probably holding the current note on the property.
I see. And then is that $40,000 that we're going to need? You said 25 and between 85. Is that $40,000?
I think when we're all said and done after the property resells, there'll be about $40,000 we'll be out of from our in lieu fee
and
fund.
We have like $400,000 in that.
I believe
fund
that's
now.
About the right amount.
Right. And then could you explain how we get this back? What's the silent second, and how does that work as far as percentages go?
Well, the silent second will cover the amount between what we paid for the unit, $325,000, and what it's actually worth on the market. And we're estimating that's somewhere, in the $150,000 range. So we hold that silent second until the unit sells in the future. So if the current or the new owners live in there for 10 or 15 years, we never get that money back. But when they sell, if they decide to sell at a market rate, then we'll get that money back at that point, and we can put that into the in lieu fee fund.
So they have the option of selling at a market rate, and we share the profit, so to speak.
Or yeah, there is an
depreciation.
Yeah, there's a little bit, and yes, we get our silent second back, and then there's a share. In terms of the appreciation, there's a split there. The longer they stay in it, the more the appreciation they get back.
Is it a 30-year?
Yes, it's a 30-year deed restriction.
So if they stay in for 15 years, it's 50% of the depreciation they get or something like that?
If they say the whole 30 years, they get everything back.
Oh, I know.
I can't remember what the sliding scale is at 15 years.
Well, that explains it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'll close it to the council and open it to the public. Is there anyone in the public who wants to speak on this?
Thank you. Mike Jackson, Tascadero. Being in the real estate business, these things have always confounded me, how these work. And this, in this case, is what has been worrying me about them for years. Now then, let's say round numbers.
The Pacific Mortgage, and I actually represent clients who have applied to purchase this property under the conditions of the inclusionary, Tascadero's current inclusionary program. These individuals have taken the steps to pay a $350 non-refundable fee to HASLO, which is Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo. It's the outside agency that Atascadero is has in place to check the qualifications of, and the all the criteria of applicants. I have the certification from HASLO approving the current interested party. They were here in the audience tonight. They have been ready to open escrow for the last 3 weeks. I've had to pull the reins back to go through the process. These individuals actually are very well qualified. I have reviewed their credit application. I have received all the documentation to do a complete full doc loan with these clients. And they have, as I said, they have agreed to purchase the property under the conditions of the inclusionary program.
Thank you, Mr. Atwell.
I got one.
Councilman McClay has a question.
Yeah. What interest rate are they? Yeah.
The interest rate for this loan in particular that they've been qualified at is 5.75%.
Whoa.
It's a 10-year fixed. And that was the interest rates as of last week. They haven't changed anything since then, and they could. There's a lot of different products out there. They could select a 30-year fixed and be a little bit higher than that, but have the stability.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Mr. Atwell. Anyone else? Seeing no one, close it to the public, bring it back to the council. I have a question about when we're going to see the affordable housing ordinance.
That is one of our budgeted items. We're hoping to get that approved to hire a consultant to do the formal inclusionary ordinance. So that is one of our future work programs if it's funded.
Okay. Councilmember Burrow?
Do we have an estimate of how much money we actually have in our in lieu fund for affordable housing?
I believe it's in the neighborhood of $400,000 right now.
Councilmember Clay.
Yeah, my only concern, you said there's 40 other units out of there that are under the same direction as this house. Is that not right?
Yeah, there's 40 of them that are out there that are deed restricted.
Right.
Not all of them are finaled or not occupied at this point, but there are 40 that are under the older program.
I see. Because my concern with the fallen market that we could get some more back, and when are we going to run out of money in the in lieu fee fund? But we'll just have to figure that out later, I guess.
Let's be positive. Any other discussion? How about a motion? And the resolution has been amended to be $325,000 in all instances.
I'll make a motion.
Sure.
Well, I strongly support to appropriate $325,000 from the Inclusionary Housing Fund Program in lieu of fees for the purchase of 8985 Quezon Court. And the City Council directs all proceeds from the sale to be returned to the Inclusionary Housing Program in lieu of fund.
So we got a motion
for
staff recommendation by Councilmember Burrow, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Brendler. Any discussion on the motion? Call the question.
Councilmember Burrow?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Motion passes, so we will now adjourn.